All right, we are back. Episode 22 of the Reporter's Corner. I'm one half of your co-host, Jared Rivedo, with the Bemidji Pioneer. With me is Trent Singer of Sioux Falls Live, the better half of the co-host. Trent, how are we doing today?
Doing all right, Jared. I know you're having a good week. Still got CCHA stuff going on. You know, it's a somber time over here. I lost the Reporter's Corner Bowl this week. And it's just tough. It's tough to take an L from time to time, but we move on. We move on, and we look to next season, you know, and best of luck to the Beavs this weekend.
Don't sound too depressed.
No, it was good. It was a great series. It was a great series of hockey, really, all the way around. And especially that overtime game. Obviously Bemidji prevails. They move on to the semis, but it was a battle, and it was just great to get to share it with you too, Jared. I mean, that was just a lot of fun to be able to sit there and take in three great nights of hockey, two sold out nights. Mm-hmm. And then a great Sunday game. I mean, it was just as good of a Sunday game, a third game in a series of this playoffs that you could have.
Awesome. Yeah. It was a series that deserved three games. And
100%.
I think there was at least two more series that probably deserved three games as well. And, one of them features our guest today, Christian Stover. He would disagree that it deserved three games for sure, but no, goaltender Christian Stover of Bowling Green, one of the CCHA Goalie of the Year finalists, Mike Richter Award finalist. I mean, he is, for as good of a goalie as, he might even be a better interview, because we had a really awesome chat with Christian in his lengthy, lengthy junior career. So, Trent, let's get into what we chat about with about one of the best goalies in the CCHA.
Yeah, undoubtedly one of the best goalies, one of the best goalies in the country too. And he's coming off an outstanding weekend too. Gave up one goal on the weekend, and against a good offense too, a good Michigan Tech team. Bowling Green wins that game, the 4-5 game in the first round, and then move on. They're playing St. Thomas this weekend, but we talked a little bit about this series this weekend and really a Christian season. This is his best statistical season to date. Just had an outstanding season since November. He took over in late November and didn't lose a game. His first nine, he didn't lose. So we talked a little bit about this season. And of course, we got into the early playing days. He's from Northville, Michigan, played for the Honey Baked program in Michigan. And, you know, eventually went on to, like Jared said, play in a long, long junior career. It was 4 years. I think that's two people in a row that we've had on this show, Jared, that played 4 years of junior hockey. And he played for six different teams in the U Show, called himself, I believe, a self-professed suitcase at one point in this interview. And so he talked a little bit about his junior career and really, you know, it sprawled all the way to that 2020-2021 season, which was the COVID year. Had a great season there in New Jersey in the Knoll. And then he obviously makes his way to Bowling Green. And so we talked a little bit about those early playing days at Bowling Green. Bowling Green's former goaltender, Zach Rose, who, you know, transferred to Augustana ahead of, the Vikings inaugural season, was on that team. And, so we talked a little bit about Rosie's, just mentorship, because he's been a mentor pretty much everywhere he's gone. You hear the guys at Augustana talk about it. Well, Christian Stover had similar things to say about Zach Rose. So we talked a little bit about that. And then obviously we went in a little bit about this season, and the Falcons are under a new coach and Dennis Williams. We got his take on just really how Dennis Williams has helped just bring this team together. They didn't transfer anybody in a season in which they had a new coach, which is remarkable. I believe they were the only team in the CCHA that didn't have a transfer. So yeah, we talked a little about that. We asked a question, got some Scoot question in too. You know, we always love talking about Scooter Jess and what he's kind of meant to this program. He's been there for over 30 years, I believe, and as the equipment manager. So, and then we closed it out with some one-timers, and yeah, this was an outstanding interview. Really, really enjoyed getting the chance to talk to Christian and hear his take. You know, obviously they got a big series this weekend against St. Thomas, going up to Mendota Heights. So we'll be certainly keeping our eyes on that. I know Jared will. Implications with the game he'll be covering in Mankato, because on the other side we've got the Beavs and the Mavs in the other semifinals. So yeah, it's a great chat, and I think if you're a Bowling Green fan, you're really going to enjoy this one.
So let's do that interview with Christian Stover.
Well, we are joined this week, as we talked about there in the intro, Christian Stover. Christian, first things first, man. I know it's a midweek for you. You know, how you feeling? I mean, you're getting to play on in the postseason here, and you know, how's the vibe just kind of within the team right now here?
It's great. Obviously, if you're able to continue your playoff run, it's always a good attitude in the locker room, and yeah, vibes are good right now.
Awesome. Yeah, let's start a little bit with last weekend. You guys opened the playoffs at home against Michigan Tech, took care of business with a sweep to advance to the semifinals. You know, I think it's a particularly impressive considering you guys kind of limped in a little bit, winning four of your final five regular season games, but you caught some heat here in the first round. Was there sort of a reset you guys tried to embrace in practice last week? And what do you feel like was sort of the biggest key to that first round series win?
I think just not really looking at who we were playing. I was also out for a bit leading up until the playoffs, so yeah. I was kind of a bit worried if I was even going to be able to play. Obviously, I was able to come back, do what I needed to do, and the guys stepped up when we needed to. Obviously, the last time they came here, I think they shut us out, and we beat them in a shootout, so they definitely had more confidence, I think, going to the weekend, I'd say, but we knew what we were taking care of behind the scenes, and so we weren't really worried.
Yeah, and take it back a little bit earlier this year. I mean, you saw your first action, what was it? I think November, and you went 9 games without a loss during that stretch. You had a couple of shutouts in there. It's just, and it's an impressive goalie room too with Cole Moore. I mean, that kid's a stud as well. Just how were you guys able to kind of manage that early on, and how were you able to take over that starting job in your senior year?
Yeah, I was injured at the beginning of the year, had some other stuff I needed to take care of on my personal end that I really won't get into here. But I don't know, I just think throughout my whole career here at Bowling Green, I stepped into a role where my goalie partner got hurt, and so as a freshman I was kind of just pushed into that starting position no matter what, even if I was ready or not, even though I think I was ready at the moment. I think the big thing for me this year was just kind of just having fun with it all and kind of just realizing it is my last year. Like, it's hockey at the end of the day. Why make something that I've loved and enjoyed my whole life kind of just more pressure on me and something that's stressful and anxious and all this stuff. And just going back to how I played at Honey Baked and just having fun and kind of going to each game, knowing that we're going to win and not fighting and hoping and stressing if we're going to win, just kind of having the mindset that we're going to win this game. And it's been paying off a lot.
That leads us well into what we want to talk about next. Maybe let's talk a little bit about your early playing days. You mentioned Honey Bake. You're from Northville, Michigan. It's a western suburb of Detroit, for those who don't know. You played for Honey Bake. I mean, when did your love for the game really start, and how did you kind of get involved in hockey early on?
Yeah, no, for sure. So I'm actually from Long Island, New York.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so I live in Michigan right now. That's, I guess, the hub, I guess we'll call it. But no, so it started when my dad introduced hockey to me and my brother. He grew up playing it, always had a love for it. We actually lived in Florida then for a bit. And that's how I got recruited from Honey Baked or by Honey Baked. And we moved up to Michigan in 2010. And that's really when the career took off, I guess, when I started playing travel hockey for Honey Baked. And they gave me the opportunity to grow with a lot of good players that have pretty much all played Division One, if not pro right now. And we all grew together, and we all made it in our own paths wherever we want to end up. So it's been good.
You know, I want to get into a little bit too about your first season of juniors. You start in the U show in Des Moines, but you end up playing most of the year in the NOL with Wilkes-Barre Scranton. And it was kind of a pretty impressive playoff run too for the Knights. I mean, you were 6-3. Numbers were, looks like you're 1.89 goals against and a 9.49 save percentage. You go all the way to the semis, fall to Shreveport. But just talk about what you remember the most about that season of juniors.
I was still a kid then. You know, I was 17, 18. So I didn't really know what juniors was about. Was uncommitted at the time. And same deal. I actually was the backup to start for playoffs there. And we lost the first game. And I remember going in before that game saying, like, hey, like, I wanted the net, like, whatever. Like, I respect your decision, obviously. But I'm ready to go if whatever hits the fan. And, like, I want the net. And obviously never looked back in that playoff run. And I knew when I came back from what I was dealing with at the beginning of the year, I wanted to make the most of my time and play in as many games as possible. And I know that under our new head coach here, Dennis Williams, like, he's performance based, and I just knew I needed to perform and if I wanted to play every game. So that's what we're doing here. But sure, with Wilkes-Barre that year, it was a unique year because I was up and down with Des Moines. I was just an affiliate at that time. Yeah. So I wasn't really too focused on going to the USHL that year. I was just kind of focusing on first year juniors and learning the ropes that way.
For sure. It seemed like after that you bounced around quite a bit in the USHL. I don't know that I've seen an EP page with that much bouncing around.
I mean, yeah, in total, no, it was a bit of a suitcase.
Yeah. In total, you played for six different USHL teams, which is pretty crazy in 4 years of juniors, and that's a pretty long junior career too for some guys. What was there a point where you ever sort of felt discouraged by all that moving around at the junior level?
Not necessarily. I mean, if you looked at the games played at some of those teams, like, I think I only had one or two. So some of them mm-hmm. were kind of just a stepping stone to where I needed to end up. And then I played the rest of my year there. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't entirely happy with my numbers in juniors on some teams, but it's definitely given me a lot of experiences and friendships that I cherish. So I think that's the main thing that came out of that for me.
Well, no doubt, and I'm sure you know a lot of the guys that you probably have encountered at some point when you're on the ice. I mean, between Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, Youngstown, Madison, Muskegon, and Sioux Falls, where do you feel like you developed the most in the USHL, and really why?
I mean, well, I guess, like, it really depends on where I was playing at the moment. Because mm-hmm. I developed one way, like, or I developed a different way than I did at Madison from,
right.
I guess, Youngstown, we can say. Where I played a full year. Madison, we weren't the best in the league at all. We weren't even close to being probably were the worst team in that year. I was trying to sugarcoat it a bit and kind of just BS it, but I really couldn't. We were the worst team in the USHL that year. So I, again, just growing up on this Honey Bake team and constantly winning and being number one and always being known as the best, that kind of gave me a mindset of just being confident. And then obviously with all these teams and getting bounced around and all that, and then playing for Madison, obviously it made me develop a mental tactic where, okay, you're not going to win every game. You're not going to be on every game. And just at the end of the day, it is hockey. It's a sport that has no point to your life, really. And, just have fun with it and kind of just take in the most as much as possible, because you obviously don't know when you could get traded or your friend could get traded or something like that.
Sure. I got one more about the U show quick too. I mean, six towns, you got to have a favorite and the worst place to live in. Not about the programs at all, but just favorite place that you got to live in the USHL and maybe the town you don't really want to go back to that often.
Yeah. Kind of thing. Yeah, I gotta think of that because there's so many.
Yeah, there's 16. We can run them down for you again. Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, Youngstown, Madison, Muskegon, and Sioux Falls.
Because you're not even including the NOL teams too.
Well, fair. Those are small towns.
I mean, not really, because I finished out at New Jersey Titans during the COVID year, and I love that city. But great people there. My mom lives in Brooklyn, New York City, right now, so I was able to see her. But USHL team, I'd probably say Madison, Wisconsin, just being down near University of Wisconsin. Yeah. We were all too young at that point, so we weren't going out or anything like that. No, we stayed out of the parts that we weren't supposed to. But again, like, it was a really good town. I had probably the best billet family there. So I guess that compensates for being on the worst team at the point. But Madison, Wisconsin was great. I have a lot of friendships there and a lot of good memories.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that year with the New Jersey Titans too, because that was your best statistical year in juniors at any level. Just talk about what kind of led you to have that breakout season. Was it kind of experience and having spent so much time in so many different spots that kind of led you to that?
And again, if you guys were studying the EP, then you would know that I played for Muskegon and Sioux Falls in the same year as that, or as New Jersey. But that was a weird year because it was the COVID year. And I knew I wanted to play games. It was my last year. I knew I was already signed my NIL to, or NLI to Bowling Green. So I just wanted games in and didn't really pan out at Muskegon. I got a shot at Sioux Falls for I think a game or two, and again we had three goalies there, and ultimately knew we needed to go to the Nahal and just be the man there. And Craig Doremus, who's the head coach there, knew a little bit from my uncle, or from my dad, and my dad knew his uncle as they were police officers together in New York City. And again, he took me in and treated me like family, and just worked out. And
you early in that 2020 season too, that last one in I believe it was that was the New Jersey Junior Titans season, but you end up committing to Bowling Green. You mentioned it. What led to that decision, and really what other schools were you kind of looking at?
Curtis Carr, he's the one man that
good guy.
Awesome guy, great coach, but even better human. But he helped recruit me when I was committed to Merrimack. And I think when I did go to Merrimack for the summer portion, I think I was 19, and I think we were going to have 17 freshmen that year. Cool. And I really wasn't happy with how myself was developed right there. I only had 2 years of juniors experience. I wanted a bit more, and I was kind of pulled into that school to come in early, and really wasn't really ready in my head. And obviously, like, confidence is all you have when you're a goalie. And went back to juniors, decommitted, and I think within a couple months or so, Curtis Carr reached out to me. I had no idea what Bowling Green State University was, and it's an hour 20 from my hometown of Northville. But never knew this place, and obviously it's a huge part of who I am now. Curtis Carr helped me.
I want to ask you too, because so many kids and juniors are trying to get out as fast as they can, get to that college program. It's so rare that you see a kid be like, you know what? I don't feel like I'm ready. I got to go back. How important?
It's refreshing, really.
Right. Yeah. Honestly, like, how important is that to, like, kind of be honest with yourself in those moments and do what's best for yourself and not get so obsessed over the status of where you're at currently?
Yeah, I mean, college hockey is a whole different ball game now with the Canadian hockey leagues being opened up to them now. And so I guess I got in at a good point, and I'm getting out at a good point as well, where I came in at the COVID year where we were fine, like, fans were allowed, everything. And I'm getting out when this whole fiasco is starting up. So I don't know. For me, it was I've lived away from home since I'm 17, and I knew – I wanted to kind of stay closer to home. So all my friends are in Michigan, and they've been coming out ever since I'm a freshman here. And it's obviously, like, you're on your own path. Like, you shouldn't be comparing yourself to other people. And at the end of the day, you got to do what's best for you. And obviously me leaving didn't really affect much over at Merrimack, I'm sure. Like, I think they got another goalie pretty quickly, and they're fine. You know, like, no team is going to be the downfall of one person in your decisions. But it's definitely harder decisions for younger kids to make now, because you do have that transfer portal open as well. But I don't know, I want to pick a spot where I want to stay all 4 years. I didn't want to be transferring and leaving and doing all that stuff after making friendships that you get close with people in college way more than juniors. You're doing a lot more and doing a lot more stuff with them. But I'd say it's at your own pace, and it's what you value in your life.
And two, like, I mean, you talked about how college hockey is just a much different game than juniors, right? And even in the CCHA, the CCHA is going to be different from the Atlantic, from the NCHC, right? Like, it kind of takes on its life of its own, even in the conferences. But you did play 28 games as a freshman. Do you recall a moment, like, kind of a welcome to college hockey moment where oh man, these guys are a little bit bigger, shots are coming in a little bit harder, and the play is just a little bit faster?
I would say it was my first game ever at my first game ever was at University of Michigan with Owen Power on the other team and bunch of big hitters, but I don't think I was even supposed to start or play in that game. My goalie partner, who was a junior at the time, he started. He was supposed to play the whole game because I slept in a bit. My phone shut off for whatever reason, and I didn't show up to the rink on time. And the rule at the time was if you're late, like, you're not going to be in trouble. You're not kicked off, but you go home. You go home, and you don't skate. You don't work out. Yep. Like, you come back the next day. But coaches actually did say that was part of the reason why I didn't. Or why they weren't going to play me during that game. But I think it was like 5-0 or something like that. And like, okay, we got to put this kid in. And so, I mean, it worked out fine. I only let two goals in. And yeah, that was my welcome to college moment for sure.
Was that at Yost too?
That was at Yost. Yeah. So full student. Man. And it was the first game back from COVID. So the fans and student sections were juiced. And since I'm like a hometown kid, like, kids were actually chirping me on the bench, like, oh, like, hometown and like all this stuff. Like I'm just like, I didn't want to come here, but it's fine. Like, I would have been sitting on the bench all 4 years probably, but yeah.
Right. I can't think of a worse way to debut than down 5-0 at Yost Arena after your kind of doghouse for your coach. Yeah.
No, I mean, it made it better because it's like, okay, you can't play worse, you know, like, it's already 5-0. Yeah. It's like, okay, like, you're playing with free money at this point. Yep. Yeah.
For sure. You mentioned your goalie partner. I'm assuming you're referring to Zach Rose. Is that correct?
Yeah, Zach Rose.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that sophomore year, Zach goes down with an injury early on, and I know it opened up the door for you to kind of solidify your spot in goal. You finished that season with a .914 save percentage, 2.86 GAA. What allowed you to kind of make that jump from freshman to sophomore year?
I think, honestly, like, just the whole confidence that I had from that freshman year. I was invited to Anaheim Ducks camp, which was big for me and the team. But I think at that point, I think, like, Rosie's battled injuries his whole career. Oh, yeah. And I give a lot of credit to him because my whole career, I wasn't really injured except for like the last year and a half, I want to say. But I watched that kid work his ass off every single day with getting ready and rehabbing and all that stuff. But I give him a lot of credit for what he went through. And we competed every day as well. It was a good relationship that we had. We were splitting off the weekends to start, and I feel like me and him just, we kept pushing each other, and it got to a point where he couldn't keep going, obviously, and I had to take over. So it panned out for me. And but yeah, obviously, like, a lot of credit to him.
And yeah, I want to bounce off that right now. I mean, we have that question lined up, and obviously here at Sioux Falls, Zach's meant a lot to the program I cover here at Augustana. You know, he was a huge mentor for Josh Kotai, who is fellow finalist for the Mike Richter Award alongside you. How much did he help you in those early days? And was there something about the way he carried himself at the college level that you sort of tried to emulate?
Yeah, no, he would put his head down and just go to work. Not saying I don't work either, but he did a lot of stuff that I didn't do at the time just because I didn't really need to. Like, I wasn't needing to rehab a certain body part of mine, but a lot of things are different just from a lot of players at the college level versus at the junior level that you just don't see. Like, you don't see guys showing up to the rink 2 hours before, hour and a half before, because they know they need to do X, Y, and Z and put whatever in their body that they know makes them comfortable and feel good. But that's just growing up and maturing too. So like, we all do it and everyone does what they need to do.
Kind of similar to earlier in your career. I mean, you kind of start going with the injury bug last year. Cole Moore comes in and takes over the net. You know, I'm sure it's difficult, right, for you to not get, you know, be sidelined with injuries and stay on the shelf. But, you know, too, did you, getting that experience of being in Cole's shoes, did that kind of help you in maybe some of the leadership aspect of it? Or just talk about how the roles were reversed there a little bit.
For this year or for my freshman?
Last year with Cole Moore.
Last year. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like a like a pulled hamstring or something. Like I broke my hand.
Yeah.
So it was just a frustrating experience to go through, because you have to wait. You have to wait that out until you're fully healthy. And then even when I was healthy, or I guess healthy, I came back and had to tape my wrist up and do all this stuff that I just wasn't really comfortable with. Like when I put in the glove, I couldn't bend it properly and couldn't do a lot of stuff. So when I returned, I wasn't really fully healthy still. But I obviously wanted to play and wanted to give myself the best chance to play. But ultimately, I probably should have waited a couple more weeks to get myself right.
How'd you break your hand?
Shot in practice, and I finished off practice, and I'm just thinking it's just like a strain or something like that, just bothering me. But went out to skate the next day with just a couple soft punches to the glove, and I knew it was a problem when I couldn't even take like a muffin from my teammate, and I'm like just cursing and getting off the ice, and I got X-rayed and it was fractured. So yeah.
Do you remember the teammate that took the shot that broke it?
Spencer Kirsten, he's down in Orlando right now, playing the ECHL and actually tearing it up. So yeah, and he hit the same spot, same hand, everything when I returned, and I thought I broke it again. I went like through my stick and just like because I thought I'm like, okay, I just worked like 2.5-3 months to get back, and like obviously like when you are injured, like you still need to like your conditioning on the bike, and like you're just doing a lot of not so fun stuff. So I didn't want to do that again, but we got X-rayed again, and luckily it wasn't fractured again. But yeah, Spencer Kirsten did it.
Sorry to throw him under the bus there.
Well, no, that's one you never forget, too.
No, yeah, you don't forget who does it.
Yeah, maybe he'll buy you dinner too. Maybe
he's making some coast money right now. So.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this season. The Falcons, you guys are obviously under the direction of a new coach, and you're having the best statistical season you've had at college, in the college level. It's really not even close either. Mm-hmm. You're 12-2-3 with three shutouts, .942 save percentage, and a 1.74 GAA. I mean, all of those are season highs for you. What do you feel like's just led to the jump in your play?
Obviously, Willie's inserted himself here and has made a huge impact on everyone. Just to follow back on what I was saying earlier, just the whole mindset. And everyone I tell that doesn't play hockey, like I always say, like the position is usually 60-40 or 70-30 mental to physical strength. And I think just clearing up my mental space and going in with the mindset that we're going to win this game, it's just by a matter of how much and by how many periods, if it needs to go to that length. But and just having fun with it, like just kind of relaxing my muscles down, not being tense in the net. And if the puck's like down at the other end, I'll bop my head to the music or the band, or if they're chirping me, like you soak that in. You don't shy away from it.
Yeah, no, your play is obviously, you know, its own individual thing, but I'm curious to know about this team. There was, you know, there's so much documented about all the off the ice stuff that happened last season early on, and ultimately there was a change at head coach when the season ended, but nobody transferred amid that coaching change, which is the more remarkable story here. So when Coach Williams first arrived, what was the first impression within the locker room that got everyone to sort of buy in so quickly?
I think honestly the whole incident that happened last year, it was one player that deviated off on their own, and we've always been a tight group. It's we have a senior class of I think 11, but there's 15 of us that are graduating because of the fifth years. We're a tight group, and when Willie came in here, we had two requests to the athletic director and Willie, and it was just to kind of keep the whole team together as much as possible, and the coaching staff just to give us some peace of mind that we're all going to stick together here still. But it's up to them. But no, they made it huge for all of us. They listened to us and obviously granted those two requests that we had, and they earned our trust a lot that way, because the coach can come in and blow up the team and bring in their own staff and their own players, and he didn't recruit a single one of us. He didn't know a single one of us. And he has been a man of his word, and he's earned our trust.
There's one more guy on the staff that I think is pretty galvanizing for you guys, and it's Scoots. Talk about Scooter Jensen, the absolute fireball that he is, and how good was the diamond cutter this past weekend too?
I actually took a video of it on my own phone. I knew this is probably gonna be the last one because obviously it's now just all one game weekends. Yep. Knew that I needed a video of that diamond cutter on my phone, but no, Scooter's great. He's like another player on the team where you're able to talk to him and confide in him if something's going on at home or with another person or whatever it is. And we all love him to death, and he's a great human to be around at the rink.
Look, if you guys are lifting up a Mason Cup, we better get a diamond cutter out of Scoot.
I mean,
If we're lifting the Mason, yeah, there'll be more getting done with that for sure.
Yeah.
and Scooter as well, yeah. Scooter will be leading charge for us.
Yeah. Well, we want to get into what we close this out with, and they're, you know, typically they're what we call them are one timers, and you know, you can elaborate as much as you'd like, but we just kind of the same questions we ask everybody. 4 years of college hockey for you. Where's the toughest place to play in the CCHA?
The CCHA, in terms of fan base or team,
anything, wise? Just anything. Could be ice, it could be fans, whatever.
Could be the ice eye line on a Zamboni board, it throws you off.
Honestly, then it could be St. Thomas or Ferris, and it's just the whole, not to say anything bad about their facilities and all that, but just when you're playing at Slater, and you guys know how our fans can get, and when you get used to that, and then you go to somewhere where you don't get a lot of fans at all, but nonetheless that aren't even really into the game and active, then it's hard to stay engaged and keep the whole team engaged going. But yeah, it's not like a Mankato or Michigan Tech where they're down on your back, like, because when they are chirping and all that, it makes you focus, and like you want to ruin their night more.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a common answer kind of, right, Jared? Like, we get that a lot. Like, if you don't have a lot of fans, sometimes it disengages people.
It's hard to keep the energy going on both sides. I'm sure for them too, they don't like it. I'm sure they have more fun playing in our ring too. So
yeah. Also, give it a year for St. Thomas. That new barn is probably going to be packed.
Yeah. No, I'm upset that I'm not going to be able to play there at all, but good for them, and I'm sure it'll be exciting for our team when they get to go there.
Well, there's some incentive for you this weekend too. You don't want to go out in a high school bar, and you want to, you know.
I've already said that. I told my roommate Brody Waters last night, I think, or someone, forgot who, but I said we have to make it out this weekend, not because of just what's at stake, but my last college game is not going to be at St. Thomas. And I said, like, whether it's at Mankato or our barn, then yeah, like, that's what it needs to be. And otherwise, like, we keep going and see how far we can go.
Love it. Well, how about all of college hockey? You played in a lot of places too outside of the conference. Is there a place that is a tougher place to play outside of the CCHA?
Obviously that Yost game was pretty nerve-wracking. We went to Miami too my first year. I didn't get to play though. It looked electric in there. I really wanted to play there, and I think Bowling Green's traveling there next year for home and home. But so it sucks, like, I get to miss out on that. But Miami, I've always wanted to play at.
Ox Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, it's Bowling Vegas here too. So.
Who's the most talented hockey player you've ever played with? Maybe a teammate. It could have been on any of the million junior teams or someone at BG.
I know.
Talented.
Gonna need a couple hours to think about that. There's been it's been like 20 teams, right? I'm not sure. I've actually when I was at Sioux Falls, I'll throw in the people that I played against instead. When I was at Youngstown, you play the East Division teams a lot more than the West.
Yeah.
And I remember that year we constantly had to travel up to USA, and USA was traveling down to us, and it was that 0-1 group with Jack Hughes and Caulfield and Knight. And so, like, every game, like, they're just – and, like, we were an older group, and so obviously, like, we never wanted to play them, and they just were stomping through every team that they played, and they're just chirping us like, buddy, who are you? And like watch it. Like, we're going to be in the show and actually, but like, you couldn't chirp them back because like, you believe them, you know, and like, yeah, they were right. Like, you knew they weren't lying to you. So, no, just, yeah, the whole USA, NCDB, teams, I always hated playing. And yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Always pretty loaded. Always pretty, yeah, loaded. What, who is there a player that stands out as the most underrated player that you've ever played with or against?
Yeah. I mean, obviously the list is probably a lot longer than,
right,
who I'll just say, but I remember at the time, Trevor Kuntar at Youngstown Phantoms, he was always an underrated player, but just like shifty and very strong in a stick. But he finally started getting some credit when he went to Boston College, was drafted by Boston Bruins, and I think he's in their Providence system right now. So he's doing good.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Who's the most famous person in your cell phone?
Most famous? Shoot, I don't know. I'm trying to think here. Because I know I have some guys that play in NHL, but I don't know. My brother's friend, Noah Lalonde, is pretty famous now.
He's
You guys know him. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
I'd say,
like, not super close with him. He's my brother's friend, but I know him.
Hey, you got the number, right? You can just throw that up right here. Right? Yeah. So.
Yeah. All right. And then last one we got for you. Who's the best golfer on the team and who is the biggest sandbagger?
Biggest golfer on the team, Pete Aigner.
I think that's what Dalton Norris said too.
Yeah, I mean, he lives on a golf course, and I live here in the summers as well, and so we're always going out. But no, he's a stick at it. Sandbaggers like want someone that pretends to be bad at it, and then they're good, right?
Yeah, they try to get strokes. Maybe they're just trying to find a little edge on the course.
I'd say that's me, because like I really don't think my game is good, but again, like, I think I'm just really hard on myself, but probably Brody Waters, I'd say. He's probably like a true sandbagger.
I think Dalton Norris said him too.
He's a sophomore and he's having a good year as well. But
he is nasty.
Yeah, his golf game could get better. We all can.
Yeah. So anyways, that's all we got for you. Thank you so much for hopping on the show. We really appreciate it. Best of luck this weekend. It should be an absolute war between you guys and the Tommies, but it'll be must see TV for sure.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Thank you guys.
All right, once again, thank you to Christian Stover for joining the show. Subscribe to the CCHA show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. And subscribe to the CCHA on YouTube. Follow us on Twitter at Trendsinger and at Jared Rubato BP. You can check out our work at BemidjiPioneer.com and SiouxFallsLive.com.